Welcome to episode 320 of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Maureen Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
And Bill Harris.
We are without Melissa today. She is swamped with work, so we are going to push forward. The theme of today's show is going to be our mid-year top five, but it's been a couple of weeks since we talked, so we figured we would come at you with some of the stuff that we've been watching recently. Guys, I haven't really seen anything new, so I'm leaving it to you to guide us through the theatrical releases of the past 3 weeks.
Do you want me to rock this one, Bill, or do you want to go first?
No, you go first.
All right. Well, let's rip the Band-Aid off. Strangers Chapter 1. Renny Harlin takes over a solid franchise from Brian Bertino to Johannes Roberts, who did a solid job with Pray at Night. Pray at Night's a gorgeous neon. It's got points of neon nightmare that I really love in it. Like, it's a solid film. Strangers Chapter 1 is boring as all fuck. And like, nothing happens. And with following two of the most infuriating characters within the first 3 minutes of even knowing these characters, you already hate them, especially the boyfriend, who is just pure awful. And yeah, like, a lot of nothing happens, and then it says to be continued, and I'm like, well, I would hope there's something more than that. I'm assuming they're going to explore this town that this is happening in, the small town. I mean, we saw Richard Brake for all of like a minute and a half, and you don't underutilize Richard Brake, thank you very much. And Renny Harlin hasn't made a good film since, holy shit,
the 90s,
late 90s, Deep Blue Sea. And you can't even say Deep Blue Sea is a great movie, because it really found its niche in being crappy high budget schlock.
Yeah, that movie hit in the right way though when it came out, for sure.
It did. That's the last thing that was marginally good. And I mean, he dropped the ball with Mindhunters in that cast to make a good movie. He made it just a movie that didn't even make sense. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I and they gave him all three?
Wow.
Really? Maybe they should David Gordon Green this guy. As much as I have a reverence for like Cliffhanger and Die Hard 2, and Cutthroat Island, and you know, no, fuck this. I don't even know how this gets traction to get released in theaters anymore after this lackluster of a movie, but I don't know. That's just my thinking.
I like how I went to the theater and I didn't really know what was playing. So I'm looking at the board and I'm like, fuck, I'm gonna watch Furiosa again. Thanks.
You made the smart idea.
Yeah, the smart choice.
Yeah, that was the one that works. That's the winning one. That's a winner right there.
Yeah.
I finally got to see Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and god damn, did I have some fun with that movie. Oh boy, it's just gleefully killing Nazis. It's like Inglourious Basterds if it was way more fun. And actually based in a little bit of reality.
Yeah.
There is stuff that is just way over the top. I just love Henry Cavill walk into a room, tongue wagging, and just mowing Nazis down. I was like, holy shit. It's entertaining.
Yeah, you said Henry Cavill. Daddy Cavill, apparently.
Ooh,
the internet has new things to talk about when it comes to Henry Cavill.
I haven't seen it, but was there a character called like Polar Bear Catholic or something?
No, nothing like that. I would put the bear juice stuff on Alan Ritchson's shoulders for this movie.
Nice.
He's kind of the accompaniment of that character. I like that hero Tiffin Fiennes is in it. This starts kind of the friendship between him and Guy Ritchie, because he's going to be Sherlock Holmes for this Netflix series that they're going to do together. And I'm enjoying him more and more that I see him. And Henry Golding's in it, although I feel like he's great in the scenes he's in, but he feels kind of background to Cavill and Richson. But Rory Kinnear playing Churchill in this under a bunch of makeup.
Yeah.
Really works. It really works.
Agreed.
And I don't know. I just had a rip roaring fun time with this movie. And I love it when Guy Ritchie's having fun because then you're having fun.
Yeah. Am I going to have to watch this film?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. I think you do have to watch it. It's just fun. There's nothing like deep to it or anything. There's some cool references and stuff historically and in the literary world too that I thought was really great. But yeah, I had fun with it. I checked out Humane and I really dug this movie. Rico steals this movie every second that he's in it. He is just golden and reaching for the sky, and he's great. I thought that Jay Baruchel and Emily Hampshire play really well into their characters. And I love the irony of the movie in the end and all these little interstitial commercials, the couple interstitial commercials you see and how they're like fudging history a bit to sell their idea, I think is really funny. And yeah, I had a good time with it. And it's a pretty solid first feature from Caitlin Cronenberg. So I'm excited to see where she goes. And I felt this was in the pantheon, like these are the Cronenbergs that make films. I thought she really gives her own voice kind of in it. And there's a couple of moments of body grossness and a weird, there's a really weird scene with Jay Baruchel that I was like, oh, was that something that was going to happen? Like, was that what this was leading to? Okay, fine. All right. But yeah, I dug it. I thought it was a good movie. Let's take the plunge into a couple bad movies. This one's just horrible, and I really regret even watching it, but I watched The Expendables 4, and what the sweet fuck was that? Why did they even that got released in theaters? The CG didn't even look finished. Like,
Steve, you know better than that, Steve. You know better than that.
I'm an 80s action kid. I don't know better than that. I see Stallone's name, and I see like action heroes' names in it, and I'm like, okay, fine, I'll watch it, but... Oh my God. There's a red herring kill in it that I was like, oh my God, they did that. And they did it so brutally. Why is it so brutal? And you have 50 Cent killing to his own music at one point in this movie. And I didn't even understand the motivation on that one. Let's can move on. I don't want to get her name because I was almost called her Arena. Ishana Knight Shyamalan's new debut film, The Watchers. Just like a half-baked student film idea that was given a high budget because of nepotism. That was my frustration for most of this movie, being like, we already have M. Knight. Like, we don't need this. And this isn't even like up to his bad potential. I mean, Dakota Fanning's okay in it, but and there's just so much logic gaffes throughout the whole film that is just, what is going on? Like, did anybody like pump the brakes at all during this movie's making whatsoever? And I was just so like, bleh, this movie.
Does it at least look good? Because the trailer makes it look.
It does.
Like, visually, it actually looks like it's pretty interesting.
It does, and it's trying so hard to be scary, but it's just fucking not, and not at all. Like, not even an inkling. Like, not at all scary. This is something that is true for both The Strangers and this film. They are not scary. Like, not even baseline or under that scary.
I actually didn't think this was as bad as Steve says, but I still think it wasn't terribly great either. And it also doesn't help that you just automatically assume there's going to be a twist at the end because who is she?
Yeah.
Of course. So you're waiting for it and it ruins it. Plus, also, did you notice, did you have the trailer for the new Shyamalan film on there where it's called?
No, I didn't.
It's the movie is actually called M. Night Shyamalan's Trap.
What?
He's putting his name in the title.
Yeah, I thought it was just called Trap, but now they're retitling it. Oh. Yeah.
Well, he's not Stephen King, so no, I don't know if... No.
Wow. But yeah, as Steve said, I thought Dakota Fanning was quite good. The rest, I thought the actors were okay. But yeah, it's just by the time the ending got there, I'm just like, just fucking end.
And there's just so much stupid stuff. They're like, how does this make any sense? Like, how elaborate, like, because I don't even want to get, it gets into spoiler stuff, but just, there's just so much elaborateness and like, how do you formulate this? With what manpower? Like, how is any of this possible? And it's, yeah, I don't know. It's just really frustrating and stupid. And
yeah, it's also like, how many stupid things can the characters do before you just get really frustrated?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm really bummed because I love Georgina Campbell, especially because of Barbarian. And she's, I don't know, I thought that Dakota Fanning and I'm going to butcher her name. She's an Irish actor. Olwen Feore. Was good in it. I think really because she has such an interesting look to her that she kind of drives it, but she's also a character where you're like pointing at the whole time and you're like
the younger kid. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, he's so bad.
So bad.
Oliver Finnegan. He's so terrible in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely a skip, but I also don't think it's terrible, but it's a big skip. Yeah.
I gave it a 2 out of 5.
Yeah, I think I gave it 2.5.
Okay.
Not much better, but yeah.
On Marina's recommendation, I watched Stop Motion. That movie will make you full body cringe a lot. There's a lot of things in it. A lot of wound digging. And I'm like, like, stop it. But all the animation stuff was really, really fascinating. And this is like, it's like a descent into madness, like a hereditary descent into madness. And I thought it was kind of interesting in that way. It would pair up really nicely with that Joe Bezos movie Bliss that was on Shudder probably 3-4 years ago now.
A strange film.
Yeah, of artists losing their shit. Yeah. And I think it would be a nice pairing with that. I dug it. I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. Solid stuff. I rewatched my Criterion of Seven Samurai because this is the 70th anniversary. I think probably in the 70 years, a lot and enough has been said about that film, about how incredible it is. But it's just the groundwork for so much.
Toshiro Mifune, quite the badass, eh?
He's so great. He's so great. And he just commands the screen every time he's on it. And he's just got so much instant charisma that I love him so much. Yeah. I had fun with Immaculate. It feels like an Italian horror film. Transplanted.
Just takes forever to get there.
It does, but holy fuck, I wish I saw that final scene with an audience.
No, it does not take forever to get there. That's half the joy of it.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, it was so good.
The last half hour is quite good, though.
Holy crap, is it ever. And that's where it turned. That's where it felt like Fulci or something like that. Like, that's really where it starts leaning into that just almost gonzo-ness. The tongue dissection, like all that kind of stuff. I just fucking gnarly. And some of the gore reveals I really dug in that film. And holy fuck, that scream scene. Like, it's like... it's like uncomfortable levels. You're like, holy, is still happening? Like, you almost want to hold it up and watch and be like, all right.
Yeah, no, I love that movie.
Oh,
I really, really like
wild,
that
movie a lot. Wild.
I do like a good nunsploitation.
See, and hell for me, I think I might have said this when we last talked, but I also saw The First Omen, which has like a very similar plot. And like on a technical basis, I think The First Omen is a better made movie. But for me, I still prefer Immaculate. Like if I had to watch another one again, I would watch Sydney Sweeney losing her shit any day of the week.
I haven't seen First Omen yet. I really do.
It's pretty good. Like it's actually like a solid movie. Like it's shocking that it's like part of this franchise that's been going downhill for a while. Like it is a really good movie. It's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be an Omen movie. It just happens to be an Omen movie. I thought it was really, really well done. Like on a technical level, it's a far superior film. Like the director whose name has escaped me has like an amazing like visual palette, and her cinematography is beautiful. And the movie's got these scenes that feel like they're out of nowhere, like super artsy, but they totally work. It's very kind of like, it's great horror, but it's also like a bit of an experimental film, which I really dug. I thought it was really, really good. But for me, on a personal level, I will take Immaculate any day of the week.
Yeah. I want to get a little bit of distance from Immaculate, but I definitely want to check out First Omen.
Yeah, it's really
for
good.
Sure.
So did I hear right? She did that movie because they said if you do Madam Web, we'll let you do that one. That's what
probably.
I heard.
I think it was part of it. She was the champion of this movie. She carried this movie on her shoulders because they were going to make this movie. Funding fell through. So basically her and Michael Mohan, Michael Mohan.
Yeah.
She was like, well, I'm not going to let this movie fall apart and we will get this movie done. She did the whole producer route and everything, and she got this movie fucking made. So
yep.
Fucking good honor. I think it had to be a combination between anyone but you and the success of Anyone But You and her doing Madam Web.
I could see that.
That probably got the funding for that.
Will Madam Web be on Marina's top five? Stay tuned to find out.
That is called a teaser, folks. That is a good one.
That is a teaser.
In more ways than one. I checked out a documentary on Crave. I think HBO produced it, All That Breathes. It's about a couple brothers who are basically caring for and doing, veterinary work on the black kite. A bird that flies around New Delhi. There's a shitload of them. And they're really beautiful birds. They kind of look like a little falcon. And just like a really beautifully shot, like a very differently shot documentary than I've ever seen before, about two brothers who give up everything to take care of these birds and spend all night, one or the other, like sewing up wounds and feeding and patching up these birds. Just like a beautifully done film. It won me over because there's one scene they talk about the beauty and art that was part of the Hell in the Cell match between the Mankind and the Undertaker, and I was like, oh, this movie gets me.
That's awesome.
I was like, you win movie. But I'm really interested in this filmmaker. His name is Shanok Sen. And his approach to making films, it's really fascinating. So I really dug that. So last week I had the option to watch either Inside Out 2, which I had tickets for weeks in advance, or switching them up for Bad Boys Ride or Die. And you know that I switched it up for Bad Boys Ride or Die. And I had a fucking hell of a time with this movie. This movie it's not great. It's not going to win awards. It's not going to blow anybody away. But anybody that likes the franchise will like this movie because it's just another continuing piece in the bromance between Mike Lowry and Marcus Burnett. And Martin Lawrence steals this movie because he's fucking adorable. And These two guys that filmed this movie are doing a lot of fun stuff. Adil and Belial, doing a lot of fun stuff as far as the execution of these action scenes. And I thought it was really, really entertaining on that factor alone. And yeah, it had me pinned for the whole film. I was not bored once during that movie.
Mike Lowry.
Oh,
I don't know. They're leaning really hard into the behind the scenes and they got me on that. Like I saw some footage of one of the scenes where I think Will Smith has the camera like mounted on himself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's a pretty cool little gadget tech thing that you got going on. So, I mean, I would watch the behind the scenes. No problem. I'm looking forward to seeing this one. I like the Bad Boys franchise. They're fun.
And that scene is executed really well. It looks really fucking cool. Like awesome. The way they did it, I was like, that's cool.
That's
like,
awesome. I mean, yeah. So, I like the tech. So
did the movie miss a certain director who did the other ones?
Australian director jail. Like, I don't know what happened to him. He's just like disappeared after Ambulance.
I guess so. I don't know. Ambulance, I enjoyed. Six Underground.
Movies, actually.
Yeah. But that also comes after Six Underground, which is almost borderline fucking unwatchable. Like,
I didn't watch it. It's literally a
piece of shit. It's so bad. But Michael Bay does show up in Ride or Die, so.
Oh.
Nice.
As him, like, yeah, he shows up.
Bagasm.
Bagasm.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I had a good time with it. I bought something sight unseen just because that's from 2008. Just because Anton Yelchin is in it, and I'm on a crusade to own everything that Anton Yelchin was in, because I just adored him, and I feel like there is a loss in the world without him. But I watched Middle of Nowhere, which has Eva Mori and playing her mom, Susan Sarandon, which I was like, oh, all right, they probably know that dynamic quite well. But I don't know, Anton Yelchin kind of is the reason to watch this movie. Like, it's a little character piece, a little like late teens, early 20s character piece. And did I even say what it was called? Middle of Nowhere.
Okay.
And it's by a filmmaker it's by John Stockwell directed this, but the writer just like never really did anything again. But yeah, it's just kind of like a run of the mill late teen film. It just really reminds you how special Anton Yelchin was and how much like charisma and charm immediately he has. As soon as you see him on screen, you're like, oh, this is going to be a character. Like, this is going to be good.
Did I tell you guys I got a 4K of Green Room from the UK?
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Okay. If we're not talking about director jail, where the fuck is Jeremy Saulnier? Yeah. Where is he? After you drop Green Room.
Well, he did Hold the Dark.
Is that what it was called?
Which wasn't great.
That was the Jeffrey Wright one.
Yeah. And then I think that was even for Netflix or something like that. And he hasn't been seen since. Actually, he did True Detective and got fired.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was he hired before before Issa Lopez was?
No, it was the season before.
Oh, season three? Oh,
he did a few episodes and then he got fired. And I don't know what happened, but that might actually mean that he is actually in director jail, because
he should reach for a high five from Josh Trank.
Yeah. I actually watched Chronicle like a couple months ago, and that movie still kind of slaps.
It so does. I think that Josh Trank got screwed.
Yeah.
I think he got screwed. And I think we will never really know to the levels of what he got screwed. But that Fantastic Four movie that came out, that wasn't his film whatsoever. That's Simon Kinberg. And that's about it. I can totally believe it's a Simon Kinberg movie. We've all seen X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Dark Phoenix. We've all seen Dark Phoenix. And guys, I finally watched Robot Dreams.
Yeah.
Did you cry?
Like, so much.
Yeah, right. We saw an ad for it again yesterday. I was talking to somebody else about it because it's now playing theatrically. And then I could not get the fucking song out of my head. And I was diving to. Do you remember? And thinking about skating in Central Park with a dog and a robot.
As soon as you see robots smile, you're like,
yeah,
I'm sold. I'm sold on all of this.
I still remember seeing that film at VIFF and the end scene happens. I'm just kind of sitting there going, fuck.
this is in that category of like the Red Turtle or Marcel Duchamp with shoes on. Like, this is like that special side of animation, and I don't know, it really, really touched my heart. It is so overwhelmingly bittersweet. it just is, and there's also such a reality to it, and yeah, it's a movie that's going to stick with me for a long fucking time. Like, I really, really, really love that movie deeply.
I'm still telling people to see it.
It's super frustrating, too, that it, like, Boy and the Heron won the Oscar, and there was legitimately three better films than Boy and the Heron.
Yep.
And that was one of them.
Yep. Yeah.
The whole system failed this movie.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's out now, it came out on Friday in some sort of a limited Canadian release, I guess, through Elevation. It's still not fucking enough. Not enough. No. This movie should be in every theaters.
Yeah.
Every theater.
Neon Flublet.
And for a studio that I love and I champion all the time, like, I'm always speaking about how great Neon is, especially coming later when at the end of the year, Long Legs may possibly be on that top 10 at some point. I have a good feeling. And yeah, then they do something like this to something beautiful that needs to be so widely seen. So yeah, such a bummer.
At this point, I'll be happy if they release it on like an actual like Blu-ray or 4K. I would like to see that.
You guys don't even really understand how badly they screwed this up.
I know how badly they screwed this up.
Like, Tim League used to own Neon, and he runs Fantastic Fest, and it didn't even play Fantastic Fest.
Yeah,
that's how much they didn't even care about the film. Like, it just pushed.
It's not that they didn't care about the film, because Inside Baseball, they talked to all the right people right after Annecy about whether this thing had legs for an Oscar campaign, and everybody told them it did, and they still fucked it up. Like, I'm still not 100% sure how they dropped the ball so badly, because they talked to everybody that they needed to talk to. I know, because I had those same conversations with all the same people. We all talked about, you know, the movies that were going to be the movies that we needed to look at for the Academy Awards, and Robot Dreams was at the top of the list, and Neon had talked to them, and they had said, yes, the movie has legs, like, you need to push it. And they still dropped the ball. Like,
frustrating.
It is excruciatingly frustrating.
Well, at least you came back from Annecy and named it as your like number one in mid-year last year.
Yeah. I have another one for this year, and I guarantee you IFC is not dropping the ball. They are running with this all the way to the bank if they can.
Good.
Yeah.
Robot Dream should almost be a cautionary tale at this point.
Oh yeah. It definitely needs
to
be.
That's so fucking frustrating. Because A24 jumped on Marcel Duchamp and they fucking rode that fucker. Because they knew.
Yeah.
This could have been Neon's Marcel
Duchamp. It should have been.
It should have been. What a fucking frustrating thing.
The sad part is they talked to all the people that they needed to, and they still didn't do it.
That should be on a sign on Maine, to be honest, because everyone should know that. And everybody that sees that movie and comes out with this same feeling about this movie should know that Neon fucking sandbagged it.
Well, I mean, it's admittedly, it's also not fully their fault, because it should have really won the Crystal Prize and it didn't. I don't even know what won the Crystal Prize last year. Whatever it was not Robot Dreams, and that was the movie that deserved to win that prize. But whatever. It's just salt in the wound. It's out there now. People see it if you can. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, definitely.
You will not be disappointed.
I got a couple older ones. One, I just felt sad watching it because I got sent a Blu-ray copy of a reissue of Beverly Hills Ninja, which is like one of the final films that Chris Farley did before he died. And oh man, you can see how sad he is. Like, you can see the minstrel nature of this, of like, the fat, goofy, lovable guy that falls all the time. Like, this movie walks so Kung Fu Panda could run. But it also rides the coattails of Mortal Kombat. Like, it's like, remember Robin Show? He's in Mortal Kombat. Like every chance that they can get. And I mean, there's sad stuff around this movie. Like, Chris Farley, like, tried to dodge this movie for years. He didn't want to do this movie. And then he finally did do the movie. And then when they screened it, he was at the premiere and he cried on his friend's shoulder after it was done, because it was so bad. And yeah, I mean, he's the only lovable thing about the movie. The whole movie sucks.
It sucks that Chris Farley never got to do his Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah, it's a bummer, because I think he had it in him.
Yeah.
So he never got to evolve. They never allowed him to evolve, and that's really disappointing. I watched another Criterion that I've had in my collection for a bit that I've never actually seen before. Neil Jordan's Mona Lisa.
Bob Hoskins.
What a great, I think this is my favorite Bob Hoskins performance.
Yeah, he's a badass in that film.
He's so good. George rules.
I'm actually kind of shocked that this is on Criterion. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. It's a more recent one, I think, in the last year and a bit.
I love it. It's a great movie. I didn't realize it was Criterion level great. But then Risky Business is coming out on Criterion. Yeah. So why not?
Yeah, exactly. But Bob Hoskins, his chemistry, Kathy Tyson with Kathy. Yeah, the lady he's driving is so great. Michael Caine plays Slee is so goddamn well. And Robbie Coltrane, like young Robbie Coltrane, like there was so much I was about. And like the introduction of George is great. As an actor I've loved for so long, but this might be nudging at my favorite Bob Hoskins performance at this point of his great career that he had. I just noticed this one on Crave, and it's from 2023. I really hadn't heard of it, but they're doing like a big elongated version of the Three Musketeers. D'Artagnan is the first part, and what sucked me in right away is Vincent Cassel is in this, and this is the
French one, right?
Yeah. Because there's another one out now, Milady, which follows Eva Green's character, who is another actress, the reason why I ended up watching this first film. And she's really kind of only in it here and there for a little bit. But Vincent Cassel is kind of like a main, like he plays Athos. So he's like main dude, right? But I don't know, just a lot of dull patches in this. And it did some of the epic French cinema stuff that I don't really like. And it kind of makes me yearn for like a more interesting palette, like a Christoph Gans or something like a Brotherhood of the Wolf type of thing. It could have really benefited from that. Just a bit dry here and there. So
throw a little Martyrs in there or something.
Yeah, get something a little vicious. Come on,
I love a movie with a good skinning.
Yeah, exactly. I love a movie where it's an idyllic dinner, like breakfast setting, and then everyone just gets mowed down by a shotgun.
Yeah.
Listen, you just like flashbacked me back to the year that there was that run of French films. There was Martyrs, Alain Terrier, and there must have been a third one in there.
Frontiers.
Xavier again.
Yeah. There was this run of movies, and it was just like, holy fuck, what is in the water in Paris?
Yeah,
that was gnarly.
It definitely one of the most intimidating scenes I've ever seen in my life is in the movie Inside, the woman chasing the pregnant woman with the scissors.
That's all
I'm gonna say. Scissors.
Yep.
Yes.
Oof.
Yes.
That is a vicious scene. Those guys are crazy.
Those
guys are nuts.
Yes.
As far as filmmakers go, those guys are fucking nuts.
Yeah.
So Russell Crowe's in a weird point in his career.
Yes, he is.
Because I watched The Exorcism, which is weird after he did his spaghetti and meatballs, The Pope's Exorcist, where he had his ridiculous Italian accent. This time he plays an actor that's going to play an exorcist, and then the set is haunted. This is a weird one. It's I'm going to say this film isn't terrible, but it isn't exactly good. It's still entertaining. I like, I think it's Ty Simpkins, or no, Ryan, sorry, Ryan Simpkins plays his daughter, and I thought she was pretty solid. Chloe Bailey's in this movie, and I was like, oh, wow. Because her and her sister have been very pop culture relevant in the last little bit. Adam Goldberg, who I haven't seen for a very long time, and David Hyde Pierce is in this as a priest. And I was
I'm watching it.
All right. And Sam Worthington out of nowhere is also in this film.
Okay.
But it was directed by Joshua John Miller, who is the son of Jason Miller, who played Father Karras in The Exorcist, and also Joshua John Miller played the character Homer in one of my favorite vampire movies ever made, Near Dark. So I wanted to love this film. I just kind of was only halfway there with it.
It kind of sounds like Jay Chiel should have directed this. It sounds like a cursed film.
It does, episode. Doesn't it?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I just added it to my watch list. This shit's happening.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, like, I don't understand what Russell Crowe's doing. And there's some wide shots of Russell Crowe that I was like, oh my God, like, you are not Maximus at all anymore. Like,
well, he's long removed from that.
Yeah, very. Like, holy crap. Life has been crazy for Russell Crowe over the last 20 years, for sure.
I love the part in the trailer where he's like, I have to get out of here. And it's just like, oh, God. It's like, yeah, I don't care what you say. I never have to see that film. I just think it's... I know Marina wants to see it, but I never have to see it.
Listen, you had me at David Hyde Pierce. I will watch anything with that guy in it.
There you go. He's
not in enough stuff.
With The Perfect Host. Do you remember that film?
Yes.
The Perfect Host.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Another one they shipped me on Blu-ray, which is really apropos in timing, because this director's new film is out in theaters right now. But they sent me the Blu-ray of Shotgun Story, is a film that I haven't seen since it came out on DVD in 2007. And this is such a great film that doesn't need to show you everything, but it is showing you everything because Michael Shannon is an incredible actor. And there are so many scenes in this film that I'm just in amazement of how fantastic of an actor Michael Shannon is, and just how great of a storyteller Jeff Nichols is, because Shotgun Stories is a hell of a debut. That I read a review that says this movie feels like a festival movie until it's not, and I would definitely agree with that. There are things in this movie that really set itself apart, but really gave us a neat little ground level blueprint of what Jeff Nichols would become.
I saw that at VIFF, and Nichols was there.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh my God. He's Southern Fried Spielberg to me with that Midnight Special.
Oh, I love Midnight Special. Take Shelter is incredible too.
Shelter is fucking phenomenal. Come
on, so is Mud.
Mud.
So is Loving.
Mud. I know that he didn't win the Academy Award for it, but Mud is Matthew McConaughey's greatest performance.
Oh yeah. I could go with that.
Yeah, it's just so goddamn good.
No, and Nichols, as far as I'm concerned, hasn't hit a bad stride yet.
Like, no, and I every love, movie is fantastic. What was the
was his last film? Was the last film was Loving, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yes. That was the last film. Oh God, that move
with Ruth Negga.
Saw the press screening for that movie, and it lived in my heart. It was so good. I and just the chemistry between Joel Edgerton and Ruth Negga and that, who, and I'm already deeply in love with Ruth Negga anyway. So, I only have two left. One, I'm going to glow about Thelma, June Squibb. This movie rules. I loved it. Josh Morgolin directed it. And oh my God, I was all about this film. It is an act. It is a geriatric actioner, but it treats like very quintessential geriatric moments like action moments, and it plays so well. It is so cute and adorable. It also features the final performance from Richard Roundtree, who passed away recently, and it is such a beautiful performance from him as well. And I just love the cast around June Squibb. Fred Heschinger is in this, and he is probably one of my favorite new talents in the last 5 years. He's got this precocious, weirdo insanity to him that I really, really adore. Parker Posey plays his mom in this, and his dad is Clark Gregg. And it all works so beautifully.
That's a hell of a cast.
No kidding.
I love it. I love it so much. Me and my wife watched the screener for this because it was sent to us by VVS. And I don't think it's playing very wide because it's not playing in my town, but I implore people to go see this movie. This movie is so much fun, and you'll be laughing so much because, I mean, we all have old people in our lives, and the quirks are all there.
It opened here. I'm seeing it on Sunday.
Good, good. Yeah. I loved it. I really, really, really loved it.
Nice.
And then finally, last night I saw Inside Out 2. Was not a huge fan of the first film. Maybe I was a bit jaded as a movie reviewer at the time. I don't really know, but it just didn't hit me as much as it hit everybody else. Inside Out 2, I really, really dug. I thought it was adorable. I love Maya Hawke as Anxiety. I thought she was really, really great in it. And especially like the problem, the villain, the badness in the film comes from such, it doesn't come from a villainous place, and it, I think it plays very well, but the stealer, the person that carries this movie out on their shoulders, in my opinion, is Lewis Black. Almost every line of Lewis Black's made me laugh so hard. Yeah, I don't know. Lewis Black playing anger is just like the perfect casting. So it just kind of works. So yeah, that's it for me. 'Cause that was the last movie I watched.
All right. All right, I'll stick with Inside Out 2. I loved it, and I wasn't. Also, like Steve, I wasn't the hugest fan of the first one. Everybody had that like their like number one of the year, and I was just like, it's a 4-star film out of 5 for me. And I just thought it was okay, good movie, but not great. I think this one's really great. Other than that, it's a little messy at times, and sometimes the characters get lost. Mm-hmm. There's so many characters. Like there's a couple characters you barely see the entire film. I think everybody had a messy teenage years, and I think anybody can relate to this film. And I thought it's super relatable, and I loved it. I thought it was great.
I think that's where I picked up on it more, is because I felt it with these new emotions brought into it. I was like, okay, I get it a bit more.
Yeah, everybody's had a problem fitting in with people.
And Ennui is like, yeah, all right. Yeah, all right. I'm on board with that.
I saw, speaking of Jeff Nichols, I saw the Bike Riders, which I'm sad to say is not as good as I hoped it would be. I thought it was pretty average and kind of ordinary with a lot of really good performances, but I just thought there was a lack of spark. It also doesn't help that Sons of Anarchy did this a lot better. Mm. And I've seen that series. And it's just all a better show. Austin Butler's really good. Jodie Comer's got a really weird accent. It's annoying.
It's really Midwestern, right?
Yeah, it's a choice. It's a choice. Tom Hardy's really good. The acting is really strong. And hey, Michael Shannon, really good.
Fuck yeah, he is.
Yeah.
How's Norman Reedus?
Good. He shows up with like really he's got like
a gnarly looking in.
Yeah, big old long hair, big old beard, and fake teeth in. And yeah,
I love him. So yeah. I'm willing to give him a chance on anything. It's the Boondock Saints and Blade 2.
It sucks too, because maybe my hype value wouldn't have been so high if this actually came out when it was supposed to, and I wasn't like just waiting for this film and waiting for it.
It's like calcified at this point.
Yeah, it's just, you know, release it when it's supposed to come out, and yeah. You know. But yeah, it's good. I just don't think it's great, which is I was kind of hoping for. I saw In a Violent Nature, the almost documentary-like horror film from the perspective of the killer. And legitimately, the whole entire film is the camera from right behind the killer, and the killer just walks around and does stuff. That's the film. If that sounds like it's going to be boring to you, it probably will be. But I was kind of mesmerized by it. And it also has one of the most intense kill scenes I've seen in a very long freaking time in that film.
It has been dubbed by the film Twitter community as the yoga kill.
Yes. Yes, it's really intense. But it's everybody in my theater thought it was incredibly boring, but I kind of really dug it. And plus, I would say I've been to film festivals. If you want to see some slow films, I can show you some slow films.
Oh, I've been to some.
But no, it's pretty cool. I think you guys are going to dig it. Hopefully you'll be able to see it soon.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so too.
We talked about The Watchers. Mm-hmm. It's not great. I saw a documentary called Hate to Love Nickelback.
Oh, actually, I was kind of interested in that one. Actually, I'm a sucker for a music documentary, though.
Yeah, me too. And I think I had a little more respect for them after this. Just the way, as my friend calls them, Chad Nickelback. Chad Nickelback's had a very tough life. He's the one that gets all the flack for the band, and he takes it pretty well for a guy who gets slagged a lot, and the band gets slagged a lot, and they're the most played band in radio history, pretty much. Like, for like a 10-year period, they were the most played band on the radio, and everybody says they hate them. I don't quite get that, but how can they be the most popular band on radio and everybody says they hate them?
I definitely don't hate them. I mean, I went into my teen years with them. I saw them. I went to see their show at the Port Moody Rec Center. I saw them at little dingy places. I picked up the Fox Seeds CD because they were on it. I picked up the first release of Curb when it came out with some classic bangers on that album. I bought Silver Side Up when it came out. It's probably the last album I really picked up of theirs, because All the Right Reasons, all that stuff, I kind of fell off. And they are responsible for, in my opinion, one of the ugliest vinyls I've ever seen in my entire life, for their album Get Rollin'. It is a hideous album cover, like just a horrendous album cover. But yeah, like you said, they can't be arena sellers if everyone hates them.
It's just
one of those things that people want you to believe is true. Nobody likes them. It's like, it's that thing that bothers me on the internet when there's somebody posts something, or there's a news article, they're like, nobody cares. Like, how the fuck do you know, you fucking idiot? That limiting bullshit just bothers me. So
I also had no idea that he lost his voice and couldn't talk for 2 months straight.
Yeah. Like John Bon Jovi situation.
Yeah. Oh, and they thought the band was over, and yeah, it was. It's not a bad doc. If you like music docs, I think you'll actually like it. It's nice. Worth checking out.
Nice.
Other than Inside Out 2, that's all I watched. Other than some TV, I finished season 3 of Shoresy, the Jared Keyso show. I quite like it.
it's so good.
I like Jared Keyso shows. Other than Letterkenny, really ran out of steam.
The season 1 premiere where he's crying on the bench is one of my favorite scenes of the whole entire series. Where he's like, "You guys are all celebrating." Like, I loved it.
It's just a fun show. Yeah. That was the final episode of what they call Part 1. So there's more coming, which is great.
Good.
And The Boys is back, and that's pretty fun. Still violent as all hell, and the characters are pretty fun. And I guess this is the second to last season. Next season's the last season, so that should be good. And
I don't know, guys. I don't know, guys. It got so woke. I don't know.
Yeah. And and House of the Dragon's back. It's pretty sweet.
I have not watched the first episode yet, but it is on my list to watch.
I kind of wish they had done a previously on House of Dragon, because I was so fucking lost for probably like half of the episode, to the point where I had to pause and find a YouTube video that recapped season 1, because I'm like, it has been too long. I do not remember how this thing ended. Other than it was violent.
Yeah. All hail Queen Olivia Cooke.
No shit, right? She's nice. So good. How far she's come from Bates Motel, I said to Dan.
Thoroughbreds was a good.
She should have been Oscar nominated for that film.
Yeah.
She was so good in that.
Yeah.
She's very good.
Again. Yep. Anton.
Yeah.
No.
God damn. If we're going to do a quick TV mention, I'm going to mention that Mayor of Kingstown is back, and that is the best show that Taylor Sheridan has done. And Jeremy Renner is fucking amazing in that show.
Wow.
So great.
I've only watched a couple of episodes of season 1 and I kind of lost interest.
I think it's so good. Like, you got to get going in it, because it's solid. Once the characters get fleshed and everything, I really, really, really dig it.
I actually liked Tulsa King too, to be honest.
Tulsa King's fun. Tulsa King's such a different,
yeah.
Like there's such a different vibe to that show. Yeah.
I watch all the Taylor Sheridan crap because that's what I do.
Well, I'm watching Bass Reeves right now, so I totally understand.
I caught up with a couple of things. Well, one thing that had been on my watch list for a long time, I finally saw North of Normal.
Which the Canadian film?
Yeah, the Sarah Gadon film, which I've been looking for a while.
Hadn't been able to find.
It did not suck. It wasn't great, but it didn't suck. It was, I will say, I mean, it was a good way to kill an hour and a half on a flight. So I saw it on the Air Canada offers and I'm like, I finally get to take this off my list. Yay. It was fine. It wasn't great. Sarah Gadon is so much better than this movie.
I love Sarah Gadon.
She's so much better than a lot of movies. She's excellent. The movie is not great. I also watched, speaking of Xavier Jean, the Paris, what is it called?
Under Paris?
Paris? The shark movie with the sharks in the middle of this. Okay, it's fucking crazy.
Is it gory?
A little bit.
Okay.
Not a lot, though. Not like, it's not your typical Xavier. It's not original Xavier Jean. It's like the Xavier Jean of the last like 5 years. Where the
It's like when he did Hitman, they pulled his teeth.
Yeah. I still think that Hitman is way misunderstood. I think that movie is far better than people give it credit for. Personally, I think it's really good. The movie was, it was fine. I watched it because literally Stephen King is like, this movie is actually pretty good. And I'm like, okay, fine.
A friend of mine said that there's a really good 85-minute movie there.
Probably,
It just needed a really tight edit on it.
Yeah, it did. It needed some more editing for sure. But it plays well. It's like hugely entertaining. And it's
on my list.
I thought it was fun. That's not a bad way to kill a couple of hours.
Well, because it was Exov, it's on my list. Like that was the only reason that I put it on my list. Because I was like, oh, what is this movie? When I was going through the Netflix releases of what was coming, and I'm like, and then I put it into IMDb, and I was like, oh, it's against. I got to put it on my list.
Pretty much. I also watched the Am I Okay? With
Dakota.
Dakota it's Johnson. Well reviewed.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was quite good. It's probably one of her better performances. It feels like she's not really acting, to be honest. It feels like just an extension of her awkward self.
It's a cha-cha real smooth again.
Yeah. Which I still haven't seen.
You should see that.
I know. I need to
see that. You should actually see both of his films. They're both quite great. Cooper Ray.
Yes. What was the other one called again?
Shithouse.
Yes. That movie fucking is so fucking, that's better than Cha-Cha Real Smooth.
Yeah.
That movie is better. But Cha-Cha Real Smooth is fucking great. And the fact that nobody talked about it was so sad. So sad.
Because that's on, I think that's on Amazon now.
Apple TV. Apple TV. Did they move it?
Okay. Well, no, I don't know. I saw it on one of the streamers.
It's Apple TV is where I saw it.
Okay.
I have a question, Marina. Does Dakota smile in this film?
Yes. There's a joke in there somewhere that I've missed, but yes, she does.
Because she doesn't smile at all in Madam Web. Like, all she's.
Okay, stop this in Madam Web. Yeah, we realize you don't like it. It's not a
good movie. She look like this piece of paper with bangs?
Well, she has bangs. No, but her and Sonia Mizuno have great chemistry. It's a great. Like, it's just a really solid, intimate drama about this woman finding herself. It's not like, I don't know, like, it's not bombastic anyway. It's very quiet. It's just a really great sort of, like, showpiece for these two really great actresses. But it's really the Dakota Johnson show, and she is really fantastic in it.
Nice.
Like, really, really good.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
And then I watched a bunch of animated movies. I'll only talk about a couple. But in the middle of all of these animated movies, I saw Jeremy Clapin's new film at an animation festival when there are literally 5 minutes of animation in this entire movie. I'm still not 100% sure what this one is doing in Annecy. But so this is from the director of I Lost My Body. It's his new feature film, which is a live action film called Meanwhile on Earth. And it's literally about a woman who comes into contact with aliens who are trying to come to Earth, but they need hosts. And she is the one that's going to provide the hosts. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's essentially the story. It played, I think, at Cannes. I'm not sure. It's played somewhere because people have seen it. It's fine. I don't know. I just don't really know what to say. I was so underwhelmed by it. I was I didn't look very closely at it. I'm like, great. I Lost My Body was amazing.
Yeah,
it was. Another great movie from Clapin. And then it was this. So I don't know. It's an interesting feature. I hope he goes back to animation because I think his storytelling lends itself better to animation. I think there is a good movie in here somewhere. This is just not the version of it that I liked.
Nice.
Not a whole lot to say there. The Colors Within, which is Naoko Yamada's new film. She did Silent Voices a couple of years ago, which I think G-Kids might have released as well. This movie is wonderful. It's this beautiful anime about these three people that become friends reluctantly. It's really about this one girl who sees people as colors. I think this might be an actual real thing, but in the movie, when she sees people, she sees colors. And it's this beautiful story about friendship and self-discovery. And there's this overtone of religion. So there's a lot going on. I was telling folks it might be a little bit of a hard sell, but if you're willing to go with it, it's really beautiful and it plays really well and it's very charming. But it's like visually, it's just the most stunning movie. It's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. Claude Barrès has a new film called Savages. This is from the director of My Life is a Zucchini. Right. I am happy to report it is still good, even without what's her name. Somebody help me. The writer of My Life is a Zucchini, the director of
I don't remember.
Portrait of a Woman on Fire. Somebody help me.
Oh, Celine.
Siama.
Yeah.
So this is pretty good. It's very much an environmental story. Still the same style of stop motion. It's really, really touching. I'm not quite sure it's quite as good as My Life as a Zucchini, but it's a completely different theme here. But it is beautiful, and I got a little teary-eyed. So I think it's pretty solid. It's kind of nice. And then the best thing I saw at Annecy was definitely Memoir of a Snail, which is Adam Elliott's new film. He did Marion Max a number of years ago, won an Oscar for a short film a few years before that. This is, it's like the sweetest movie, and it's very, very sad. It's so good. It stars Sarah Snook, Eric Bana, Jackie Weaver. I think Cody Smith-McPhee plays a voice, and it's just this story of this young woman who is like retelling her very sad life. But it's so sweet and it has so much heart. And I think I might have texted, I think I messaged you guys afterwards. I'm like, I found the next Robot Dreams. And then it went on to win the crystal. So I think they didn't screw it up this year.
Well, it's got an Aussie base to it already that I'm all about. So
yeah, no, it's really, really good. IFC is, it's an odd title for them because they don't generally do animation. But they released Marion Max back in the day. So they have gone back to the well.
I believe it wasn't Persepolis theirs.
It might have been.
Yeah,
it's generally not their thing, but they are really pushing this for awards. And I think that they're going to do well with it. It's very good. Yeah. Very, very good.
I feel it was either Persepolis or Waltz with Bashir that was IFC.
Oh, it might have been Waltz with Bashir, actually. But I don't remember, to be honest, one way or the other without looking it up.
I don't know. My Waltz with Bashir is like a European release, so I don't even know what the American one looks like.
I still remember watching that movie in like the third row of Cineplex and like bawling my eyes out. The
movie's
like,
hard. I don't think I've watched it.
Crying ugly.
I don't think I've watched it more than once when I bought it on Blu-ray.
Haven't rewatched it since that screening. I don't know if my heart can handle that movie anymore.
It's tough. And then his follow-up's really tough too. So
yeah.
That one, so yeah.
So that's my wrap. I have nothing else to report. There are other things I need to watch that I haven't watched yet, like Hitman. It'll happen. So I'm gonna pull a Bill. Because Bill always does this to us. Do you guys remember what your mid-year top five was last year?
Oh, boy. Last year?
Last year.
Like at the end of the year?
No, your mid-year top five.
My mid-year? Oh, fuck no. By that point, I mean, Barbie and Oppenheimer weren't out yet. Holy fuck, that's tough. Yeah, I don't.
Bill does this to us every time, and I'm like, I'm going to pull a Bill.
I don't remember.
Well, let me remind you, shall I? Bill's top five. Number five, John Wick Chapter 4. Number four, How to Blow Up a Bloodline. Number three, Past Lives. Number two, Boys Afraid. Number one, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, I should have known that.
Yeah.
Steve's top five. Number five, Guardians. Number four, Blackberry. Number three, Boys Afraid. Number two, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. And number one, Spider-Man.
That's fitting. Yeah.
Melissa's top five was Guardians. Number four, Infinity Pool. Number three, Pamela, Love Story. Number two, Boys Afraid. And number one, Blackberry. And my top five were Megan. Nice. Blackberry. My number three was Air. My number two was John Wick. And then my number one was Robot Dreams. Yeah.
I remember that. We couldn't remember my own. That's cool. Yeah.
So, maneuvering into
last year.
Right? Maneuvering into our mid-year top five for this year. Any preamble before we get on with our lists?
I'm obviously going to change. There are movies that are not out yet. Long Legs being one of them, which definitely will factor into my top 10.
You live in the wrong city, Steve. Next week, they're screening that with the director in theater in Vancouver.
Osgood Perkins is going to be there?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Come again? Can we get in on
this? When is this?
Next week. I think it's here. It's here. Yeah, it's next week.
For fuck's sake. I want in
on this action.
I could probably hook you up.
Well, it depends on when it is. I'm leaving Wednesday night, but we'll talk after. I might need in on this action. I will say my only preamble is put The Wild Robot on your watch list because I think that movie is going to have legs. I didn't see the preview at Annecy, but it's been selected as a TIFF title. And everyone I talked to that saw the preview at Annecy was raving about that movie.
The trailer makes me emotional.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know how else to say that. It makes me super emotional when I watch that trailer, especially that first trailer they released. Like the swells in it, I feel it.
Yeah. That movie I think is going to be trailer. That movie, I think,
drives me nuts that like TIFF is like what, 2 or 3 weeks before VIFF, and they're already announcing titles, and we don't get VIFF until September 7th.
Yeah. Different festivals, different priorities.
Yep.
So I have a top 10. Do you guys have
top 10?
Top five.
I'm panicking now. Now I'm panicking.
I made a short list and I had 10 films. And I was like, fuck it, I'm making a 10.
This is so unfair. I've had to make decisions, man.
No, but I had to
cut things away.
I can just... You know, say the other ones after we do the list, or we can do them before. It doesn't matter. Maybe somebody will hear a film they haven't heard of.
You just put me in an existential crisis within 3 seconds. I was like, oh my God.
It's all good. It's all okay. I only have a top five.
How about that? Yay. Do it now. Now we know.
All right. Yeah, forget those. It's fine.
No, now we're gonna come back.
Now you have to do a quick 10 to 6.
Right now,
do it after. No, okay. Do it after.
Okay. Did Melissa give you a list?
No, she did not.
Okay.
Okay. Who wants to go first with their number five?
I'll go.
Okay. I'll go.
My number five of the year is a movie that almost killed this filmmaker. And it was his first film as a director. Dev Patel's Monkey Man is my number five.
It's my number five, of the, too.
This movie is a vibrant, violent, but fucking gorgeous and beautiful and soulful piece of cinema. And yeah, it'll get a lot of those John Wick comparisons, but Monkey Man lives on his own. This is epic filmmaking. Not only is this like a big movie for me, I think at this point we're at the half year. My co-host of my weekly show, What the Hell Should I Watch? My daughter Chloe, this is her number one film of the year. She's watched this movie so many times now, and I just got the beautiful 4K sent to me, so I'm gonna watch it a whole bunch more times. I love this film.
The scary thought is that he shot like the last 20 minutes of the film mostly with an iPhone.
Yeah.
he ran out of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's scary.
I was telling Bill before we started recording that I literally just, if you asked me tomorrow what my number five would be, there were three movies that were kind of like, I don't know what to do. And then at the end of the day, I was like, oh, well, fuck it. I'll just go with Monkey Man. It's the one that I'm like loving at the moment. So that's the one that gets the love, but it could have been one of the other two, which I will mention later.
Okay, cool. My number five is Late Night with the Devil.
That was one of the other movies.
Yeah, that was one of my honorables, yeah.
I haven't seen anything quite like this before. It's super authentic looking, and it probably shouldn't work, but holy crap does this film work.
It does.
Just the characters, the talk show host, yes, but the traveling... what's his name? Christos?
Yes.
Yeah. Who just comes on the show and all of a sudden starts to have a really bad day.
Yeah. immediately. Like starts with a headache and then it goes
down from there.
And then they bring this little girl out who has the most crazy eyes I've seen in a movie in a very long time. And the movie just ramps up and gets really rad. And I still, as I think Maria says, she didn't quite know how they did some of the special effects, but some of the special effects were really cool for a pretty low budget film.
Yeah.
And this film just rules. It works so well and actually made a lot of money for what it was. So I think a lot of people did see it and like it. So number five, Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, it's a good choice. Like I say, it could have been, it was between three. That, this, and Love Lies Bleeding. Those were the three that I was kind of going with for number five. So at the end of the day, I went with Monkey Man.
Nice.
Because I love it. Steve, what's your number four?
Well, you just said it. Love Lies Bleeding. Rose Glass's second film. And holy shit, this movie. This is one of those movies that just speaks to me in every way. I brought up the vibrant colors that's in Monkey Man, which is notably the reds, and there are some brilliant reds in this film. Oh my God. And the cast is incredible from top to bottom. The violence is intense. The muscle noises are disturbing and grotesque, but like weirdly beautiful. And you will never in a billion years formulate what happens in that third act in your head. Never.
Yeah.
Never.
I think that's one of the things that I love about the movie so much is that unpredictability of that third act.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know where it's going to go. You kind of have an idea of maybe where it'll go. And that's maybe where it would go if it was like a regular commercial movie. And then it does not go there. And you're like, what did I just watch? I feel like I need to rewatch it. I haven't seen it since I saw it theatrically, and I'm kind of itching to watch it again. Because I remember it being just such a beautiful film.
Yeah. I won't be watching it again until I have my A24 edition of it, which is I'm going to be purchasing from the store because it's also so fucking cool looking. And I love an A24 exclusive. But I've already said on the show many times that I love the K-Stew so much. But somebody who really arrives in this movie is Katie O'Brien a bright, bright future. And the person that steals this movie in a lot of ways is Anna Baryshnikov. who just owns every scene she's in. She's just so great, and I really love her. So yeah, it's my number four of the year. So shout, far, the mid-year.
Shout out to Ed Harris too.
Ed Harris is great,
and the hair.
Ponytail mullet thing he's got going on there. It's pretty sweet.
The strapping young lad, Devin Townsend.
Yeah. So good. Is it Marina?
No, you're number four.
My number four is Sasquatch Sunset. A movie that totally shouldn't work and kind of doesn't work for the first 10 or 20 minutes because it's just there to like kind of gross you out. And then it becomes the most heartfelt film, I think, of this year, and probably the most misunderstood film of the year. I cried. I laughed. I have been talking about this film since it came out, and people don't believe me because it's a film about Sasquatches. And I tell them that, and they watch the trailer, and they go, no, not going to watch that. I implore people, get over the first 10 to 20 minutes, and you're in for a treat.
I fully agree.
I can't believe if you told me that this film would come from the guys that made Kimiko and Damsel, I'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Really? Same guys? But never doubt a Zellner, ever.
Yeah, I wish that it was more approachable in that opening like 20 minutes, because I think it would go a long way to like for people to give it more of a chance. But those opening even like 5 minutes are pretty rough, and you're like, really, this is a movie that goes somewhere? It looks weird. There's the weird sex. It feels so out of place. But then you kind of like, I stuck with it because Bill's like, it's a good movie, you should finish it. I'm like, okay, so we powered through that opening like 15 minutes. And then, yeah, you kind of get into this like weird Zen vibe. Like everything just works. It's so beautifully shot. The sounds of nature, like it just really like washes over you. It's beautiful. I kind of wish I'd seen it on the big screen. Because it's kind of like this thing where, yeah, like it's just such a pretty movie. And the messaging is so important too. Like once you get over the, you know, Sasquatch is having sex. but no, I was really surprised by it. I really, really liked this movie. I hope more people give it a chance because it is one that's definitely worth watching. But it takes a little bit of patience.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. My number four is Dune Part Two. I can't believe
this. Marina.
I know. But it's been a good year. I had a hard time. So yeah. Denis's latest grandiose sci-fi epic is my number four movie of the year so far. I expect at this point it might drop into the like the lower 5, 6. I don't even know. Like there is so much year left. And I'm in a bit of shock about the whole thing, but it just is what it is. Admittedly, I also haven't rewatched it since I saw it theatrically, and I'm excited to see it again. But yeah, it's been a good year, guys.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. Like for being like, only half a year, there's a legit 10 to 15 great movies already.
Yeah,
that's that's pretty awesome for a year that probably shouldn't be as good because of the strike. There's some definitely great stuff.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, for me, like this should be like, it has Marina written all over it. It should be my number one movie, but there's been other stuff that's been really, really great. So
the thing that sucks about this list is that legitimately last episode, you were like, my number one film is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So you know what my number one film is because it has not changed. Okay. It has not changed. Yeah.
I didn't think it would.
No, no. Your number three.
Is your number four. Dune Part Two is my number three film of the year. This is goosebump cinema. I was so enthralled and just so waiting for this film. I was just like, the anticipation for this movie was almost painful. And it came through in a big bad way. Denny just knows his shit. It looks gorgeous at every second. I love his approach, his very practical approach to sci-fi. And Danny, keep making films for you because we're enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. And that opening scene is still probably the best scene of the year. Like
so good.
It is so good. And it, like just thinking about it, just makes me so happy because it is such a brilliant, brilliant film. It's great. Can't say enough good things about it. Bill, your number three?
It's Furiosa. I think it's better than Fury Road, which I know is some fighting words for some people, but you know what? We said last episode he made his Tarantino film, and I think it's just incredible. I think I'm not really an action guy. I fully admit that, but Fury Road is like pretty much like one of the greatest action films ever made. And it was really tough to even come close to that, but I think he's done that. And I think I like the characters better. I think Hemsworth raises the film. I think just the plot itself is better. Like Fury Road's flat out action. I think this just has way more plot. So I think it's a better film. They're both great, but I think this is a little better. This, in a worse year, would be my number one film. I have these three films, the one, three, two, and one, are all number one films for me. They're all incredibly great, and hopefully you guys have this film on your list coming up, because I think it deserves to be there. Seeing if you've already screwed Dune over, please don't screw Furiosa over. Thank you.
It's not on my list. Oh. I'm sorry to bring it to you. I will echo your sentiments that I think as a film, this Furiosa is definitely the movie that has like an actual plot and story that's viable. Fury Road is, like you say, it's just nonstop action. Like it opens and it does not stop. It goes to 1,000 and like stays there for like 2 hours. This one actually like has a story and some character development. And I do feel like as a film, it's a better movie. It's just been a very strong year already. Like looking at last year's top five, I'm like, wow, that was a really good like mid-year point. And then you look at this year's mid-year point and you're like, holy shit. Like we've already had some like pretty amazing films and there's still so much to come. The end of the year is going to be really difficult. My number three is Memoir of a Snail. I love this movie a lot. It did make me cry. It's probably one of the few films this year that I've actually cried in the theater. There's just something really sweet about this story of this young girl who is coming to terms with the fact that she is not really alone in the world, even though she doesn't have any family left. And it's just such a beautiful story. It's really kind of, I don't know. It has this melancholic feeling to it. It feels a lot like Elliot's other movies that are a little bit like dark and quirky, but it has so much heart and it's so sweet. And I think it plays so well. And it's a real treat. It's a great, great movie that we have to look forward to. Nice. I love it. Love it.
Hopefully we'll be seeing it in a couple months.
Yep. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Okay.
Steve, your number two.
Challengers is my number two film of the year so far. This movie just has everything going for it. It's beautiful to look at. It has great character work that it feels unpredictable and also filled with so much charm and substance to it. The pulse of this film, thanks to Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, is just a real great vibe. And yeah, I really, really dug this movie. And I feel like I saw this movie by myself because my buddy canceled because he wasn't really into it. But I felt like I was like grinning like an idiot this whole movie because it's just so well put together. And I really, really love it. And it's kind of what going to the movies for me is all about, as a film like this, for sure.
Yeah, it's higher on my list, of course. But I will say I did of all the things to rewatch before I left for Annecy, I rewatched Challengers because I kind of felt like I needed to see it before because I knew we were going to do our top five. I'm like, is this as good as I think it is in my mind? And yes, it is as good as I think it is in my mind. I think for me, like technically, it's kind of this brilliant movie that uses all of the tools in the arsenal to tell like a really great story. Like the editing is solid, the music is great, great use of visual effects. Like the whole thing just works. But I think what I like the most about it, having seen it a second time, is the fact, and like Guadagnino is so good at telling women's stories, which is surprising because so few men are, but he just has this understanding of character and motivation, and he always brings the right actresses in to pull off these roles. And Zendaya is so good. Like you see the transition of her character, and you see like from like this young woman who kind of has an understanding of the power she has over men, and then into this like literal killer of a businesswoman who knows exactly what she wants and what she thinks she needs, and she will do whatever she needs to do to get her way. And I think that that's such a powerful message that we don't see enough of. And the fact that you have a cultural icon like Zendaya basically saying it's okay to know what you want and go out and get it, I think is so powerful, even beyond just what the movie is doing. That to me, this feels like when it came down to it, it was like, this is the movie that I think is saying the most to a generation that needs like some forward leadership. Like, and this is the movie that's doing it for me. Like, I feel very strongly about how culturally important this movie is. And the fact that it's such an approachable, easily digestible movie, I think goes a long way to like pushing the message through. So for me, this was like hands down, saw a second time, I'm like, okay, this is the movie. And I will be hard pressed if there is anything that I watch this year that is as important and as well made as this movie is. I rest my case.
Boom.
Sorry. The final scene still sucks. Thanks.
I'm with Steve. That final scene still sucks.
Love
in
it.
The best way. Yes.
Love it.
I love it. I love that it ends there. Sorry, Bill, your number two
is Civil War.
It's also my number two.
Yeah. Almost was my number one. Like it was very close. I actually have only seen this once. I tried to start to watch it again, and this film really got to me. I don't know why. It just, there's something about it. It's just really well made. And Alex Garland is an incredible filmmaker. And he just gets it. Like, it's just a really well shot film, really well. The songs are incredible. The acting's incredible. And my God, I did not expect this film. And it really kicked my ass. And it's weirdly the best action film of the year. Like, what's up with that? obviously it kind of feels like it could be next week, which I think also makes it feel way better than it probably should. But yeah, it's been a really great year for film, and as I said before, this probably could be my number one film of any other year, but I think it's gonna stick around too, because I think it's that damn good of a film.
Agree. I definitely went back and forth between this and Challengers. And I think if I'd seen Civil War again, it would have been even harder to make that decision for the same reason. Like like you nailed it. It's an amazing like piece of filmmaking. And then of course you also have this social political messaging, which is also really important and really timely. And Garland always feels like he's on the verge. He feels like a futurist. Like, he's always kind of like touching like the next big thing. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that. Like, he just reads the room really well. And I think sometimes it's people that just ignore it or they don't see it. But this movie is like on another level. I do want to rewatch it. I'm a little bit concerned because it was such a hard watch, particularly like the last 20 minutes are so difficult to watch. I don't know if I could bring myself.
Jesse Plemons scene.
Oh, that scene
alone is really tough.
Yeah, I mean, like there are moments in this movie that, like just like on their own, you're like, holy shit! Like, and then you string them all together into a 2-hour movie, and it's tense. It's super intense. And they, but again, like, Garland knows what he's doing. Like, he is an exceptionally talented filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. When you think about it, the best supporting actor Oscar should be for performances like Jesse Plemons,
right? Yes.
A guy just comes in and just kills for five or 10 minutes. And that's what it should be. Yes. Also, remember how I said a friend of mine at work watched the Alex Garland film Ex Machina and hated it?
Yeah.
Okay. We have a further development.
Oh boy.
He has watched Men.
Oh fuck.
And
he loved it.
What?
I don't get it. I really don't get it.
That gives me hope.
So, but before he watched it, I'm like, so I have to tell you, the ending to this film is a little weird. He's like, how weird? I'm like, you've never seen anything like it. It's very strange and very kind of violent. You're either really going to hate it or you're really going to love it. And I personally love it. So he comes in the next day. He's like, I love that film. It's so fucking messed up. And I'm like, you didn't like Ex Machina?
What's next on his watch list?
I don't know.
Annihilation?
I don't. Yeah, hopefully.
You need to make this happen. I need to know what he thinks of Annihilation now. That movie is messed up.
Yeah, we're living through this evolving story right
now.
We are. We are hanging on everywhere.
I will check back after he's maybe watched Annihilation. But yeah,
that's amazing.
I thought you guys needed to know that he liked
Men. Yes, that's amazing. That's amazing. Okay, well, I don't know. Steve, what's your number one?
Furiosa and Mad Max.
Yes.
Wow! Look at him keeping that under his belt.
Right? Well, you're like, he hasn't said it yet. It's got to happen at some point, right? Ah, there you go. Number one. I came out of that movie being like, let's just fucking watch it again. Like, just press play again. Like, this is... I've already said it before on this podcast of the reason we go to movies. This is one of the reasons we go to movies, is movies like this. And really, I mean, you could point to a lot of scenes in this movie, the road to Gastown being a big one, Tom Burke's first big scene in the movie. But even the scene where they drop the gate and they're separated, that whole sequence is like some of the best shit I've ever seen in my entire fucking life. Like, it's so well done. And George Miller's, he is the real visionary. The real visionary in film right now is George Miller, because he's, I mean, it's been 45 fucking years of this vision, and he's got it so well in tune, and it's such a treat for the audience. And I ate all of it up just like he wanted us to. And the fact that enough people didn't see it, that we're probably not going to get The Wasteland now. Fuck every single one of you. Every single one of you. Fuck you. From the deepest cinema loving part of my heart. Fuck you.
Be punctual.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
I agree. I envy teenagers who are growing up in a decade of film where you get Mad Max, you get Dune, you get Dune 2, you get Furiosa, like, you get Civil War, like, you get Oppenheimer. Like, it is...
I hope this is creating the cinephiles that it created in us. You know what I mean? And people like us. And it's the same.
There's no excuse for tone. It not to. The movies are there.
Yeah. And the fact that people are, that there's a large internet contingent that I probably is largely bots as well, that are basically trying to tell you that film is dying. And they're trying to actively kill film just through opinion. And it warms my heart to know that there are people that are still loving film and getting there with modern films as well.
Agreed.
It is weird though how some films that you think will make money don't make money anymore. And then all of a sudden Inside Out blows up and has like $150 million opening weekend.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
I'm so confused. I don't know where to find the pulse anymore.
No, listen, you're not the only one that's confused. The marketing people are confused too because they don't know how to read the room either. Nobody knows what this room wants. Yeah. That's the sad part.
It is sad. It's really sad because Furiosa should have been a fucking smash hit.
Oh, yeah.
After, because I mean, Mad Max Fury Road was beaten in its first week by, I think, Pitch Perfect 2. And it was never like a number one hit at all. But the amount of acclaim and the amount of love that film had, Furiosa should have been a fucking slam dunk, and everybody failed it. Just failed it.
Meanwhile, it's on VOD on Tuesday.
Can't wait to watch it again, but
Pretty much.
But yeah, like Fury Road was in the theaters for 6 months.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's
so crazy.
Bill, you're number one.
Is the greatest science fiction film I've maybe ever seen, Dune 2. I'm sorry. I said when that movie came out, you know, give me films that might be better than this. And there was two more that I thought were almost as good. So hopefully that means a lot for the upcoming films of the year. Like this, let's go. I say it again. Bring it. Bring me a film that is as good as Dune 2. I don't think it's possible, but it is. It's my thought process. It's just the greatest science fiction film I've probably ever seen. I'm biased. I love Dune, but everything about it. Denis Villeneuve for everything. And can we Return of the King this? Just let it sweep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Please. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Denny gets his director. I don't think Chalamet should win, but he's not the best part of that film. If anything, I think Rebecca Ferguson should win something.
For sure. Yeah, she's
incredible. Javier Bardem makes me laugh every time I watch that film. Just him like screaming quotes out of nowhere.
He should win Best Supporting Actor because he is really such a supportive character. And
yeah, he's so great.
He's so supportive of Paul though.
And yeah, like without Dune 2, I'm kind of curious what the box office would be this year because that's like the big film. But it's the best film of the year. As I said, last year was Spider-Verse. Bring me something else. So hopefully it happens. Didn't happen with Spider-Verse. So hopefully, you know, festival season is coming. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's go. Number one, Dune, part two.
I have no complaints. None. Yeah. I can't say because.
And the 4K is freaking stellar.
It is. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
I need to find myself. I need to order the matching set to the French 4K that I have because there's a story there. I need to have the matching steelbook. I looked to see if it was available before I left for France. It wasn't.
The OCD person in me hates the fact that the Dune 1 4K and the Dune 2 4K, the names don't match. One's a little higher. Mm-hmm. It pisses me off.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah.
So, Bill, what's on the remainder of your list?
So, number six is I Saw the TV Glow. The coming out of the closet transgender stuff is really incredible, but it's the Buffy the Vampire Slayer stuff that really got me. I was such a huge fan of that show when I was a kid. And when you guys see it, you'll understand. Like it's very Buffy, including like the font on the credits is the font that Buffy used. It's so good. And there's a Buffy cameo in it. It just rules. It's a film I wish more people were talking about. Because I think it's that damn good.
It's like niche talked about. It's like very on a niche level talked about.
Number seven is Hitman. Other than the, it might have actually been higher if it had that test audience ending. It is definitely still there. I watched it again. I was just like, shit.
It's that ending sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks. And it just takes all the life out of it.
Yeah. It's so good though. Like this, his like, the personas he does, like the American Psycho persona.
Oh my god, the Patrick Bateman shit.
Yes. Oh my god, so good.
Yeah,
but
welcome to the love fest of Glenn Powell.
Yeah. Oh fuck, I love that dude. I just want to hug him and pal around with him all day.
I saw the blooper reel. It showed up on, I think, Instagram or TikTok or something, and it's glorious.
There's a scene in the film where the two cops both talk about how much they want to fuck Ron.
Yeah.
Possibly one of the funniest scenes
it's
of the
so
year.
Funny. It's yeah. so funny. Retta is really great in that
yeah,
movie.
She's so good. And Austin Emilio is really good too.
I think he's the seed stealer of that film.
As like just a complete dirtbag.
Just
I love
completely
it.
Just yeah. piece of shit.
Yeah. Number 8 is Inside Out 2, which shocks me as all hell. I would not expect that to be here, but it is. Super good film. Shocking. Shit. One of the best Pixar films in a very long time. Number 9 is Monkey Man. You guys already waxed about it. I can't wait for the 4K. Kind of jealous Steve has it. I'll be buying that pretty quick. And number 10, Love Lies Bleeding. a film where you could literally give a person a million opportunities to guess the ending, and you would not.
That's what I love about it.
Yeah, it's so good.
What is happening?
Pretty much, like legit.
What is happening?
I'm pretty sure somebody in the theater actually said, "What the hell?"
But you accept it. In the end, you accept it.
Of course you do.
You're like, yeah, go with it. That's what happened.
Exactly.
Look, exactly. If we can get through Bo is Afraid and be like, yeah, that all happened in front of me, we can get through Love Lies Bleeding and be like, yep, that happened.
Oh man, that movie is still like ingrained in my brain.
I don't really have any like worst films of the year. I'll save that for the end. But I just want to say I have a couple CDs I really liked. I don't know if it came out this year, but the new Jungle Disc Volcano fucking rules. And Me First and the Gimme Gimmes just came out with a new live disc.
Oh nice.
It's killer. It's so good.
On the music side, I want to say that I was going to tweet that I feel very lucky that I can groove to both a brand new record from Bring Me the Horizon and a brand new record from Charlie XCX in like the same kind of tandem. And then I had my daughter, my oldest daughter, saying in my head, "Dad, you're 43 years old."
Listen, Charlie XCX is the fucking... She is like the queen. I've seen her live a bunch of times. She's amazing.
She's the real deal. She is the real amazing. Fucking deal. Yeah. Brat is a great record.
Oh, she's amazing. I am like legit super fan. She's great.
Yeah. Okay.
Love her.
She played Victoria at this concert called Rifflandia a couple years ago.
I almost went.
And
this was last year. I almost bought tickets just to go and see her.
My friends and I were there and we were the only guys there who like Charlie XCX, and it was like we'd seen the Beatles. It was hilarious.
She's fucking amazing. Yeah. The show that I went to was Heavily Gay, and I did not see that coming until I saw her on stage, and I'm like, what was I blind to this? Of course this is obvious.
Yeah.
Of course the gays love her. She's amazing.
You put that Von Dutch is a club.
Oh, that's
it's a club beat. Yeah, like, come on.
Yeah. And the remix is pretty dope too. She's fabulous.
She's really great. She's amazing. And then I have my post hardcore love, and that's definitely for the probably the people in their mid 20s, but fuck that. I love Bring Me the Horizon. Always will.
Nice.
So Bill alluded to worst films of the year. I have a couple that I watched that I wish I could get my time back. Guys, Beautiful Wedding. Did you watch Beautiful Disaster, which was fucking terrible?
No.
It's terrible. It's based, I think, on a WhatApp book or whatever.
What?
There's WhatApad. I think that's what that thing is called, where people like basically like publish their fan fiction. Somebody had published some fan fiction. I don't even know what it was fan fiction of. It was bad. I watched the first movie. It wasn't great. These are Amazon. Amazon has like made a couple of these now. They made the first movie. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. Like, totally unbeknownst to me, Beautiful Wedding is a sequel. I didn't know until I started watching it. And I'm like, these characters look familiar. I want my 2 hours back. This movie is horrible. I'm not even sure why I finished it. It's bad. Avoid it at all costs.
Yeah, I did not see it.
And then Drive Away Dolls. Please, Drive Away Dolls is fucking terrible. Like, it's so bad. It's so bad.
I honestly think I just remembered a worse film than that.
That's not possible.
Argyle.
Argyle, that's pretty bad.
Argyle is really, really, really bad.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Argyle is like objectionably bad. And it's funny because Matthew Vaughn doesn't understand why. He's genuinely flabbergasted and completely surprised.
Did we watch the same movie?
I don't know. It makes me worried about what Matthew Vaughn perceives as good anymore.
Oh my God.
And the fact that movie is like setting up for sequels.
Completely unearned bullshit sequels. And I'm sorry, The King's Man, I didn't think was a great movie either.
No.
So, I don't know.
No, I still think Drive Away Dolls was worse. Sorry.
Wow. Yeah.
That movie is not good.
It's not good, but Margaret Qualley's on like a different level of bad in that film. She's just in a different film. It's weird.
That's so sad.
It is. Like, the three actresses are all amazing. Like, they're so good, like, in other stuff. They're all horrible here. Beanie Feldstein is maybe not so bad because she's, like, hardly in it, and she kind of really is leaning into the character really well. But this thing is just such a mess of a movie. Like, nobody is good. It makes no sense. It's horrible. I cannot believe this is a Coen movie.
I know, exactly. I was about to say, it's directed by a Coen brother.
Are we kidding? It's shocking. I know. I literally gave it one star. And I'm thinking I should have given it a half star. It's that bad. It's so not good. But otherwise, it hasn't been like a horrible year. I've seen a lot of trash.
Those are
the only two that I'm like, I wish I could take my time back.
I don't want to like delve too deep into this one, but if we're just going to say just worst one, like, and drop a bomb and walk away, I'm just going to come out with Night Swim.
That was really bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. I never turn movies off, but I turn Mean Girls off.
Ooh, I haven't watched it yet. So yeah. Maybe I'll turn it off too.
I liked it better than I thought I would. It's still not Mean Girls, but no. It's for a generation, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
I do get the Renee Rapp charisma. Like, I'm kind of like, she interests me. I don't know. Her interview stuff's really hilarious. I like her as a person. So that's the only reason I'm willing to give Mean Girls a chance. And Guri Rice, I like as well. So
the music is just not great. Like, if you're gonna do a musical, then the songs have to be really good. And I just didn't find the songs that great either. So,
and I really don't like a musical. So.
Yeah, at least Ben Platt wasn't in it.
Oh, thank you. Looking like a 45-year-old teenager. Fucking listen, it's Dear the 90s. Evan Hansen is Dear Evan Hansen might be my worst movie of the last like 25 years. Like, yeah, I fucking hated that movie so much.
I will never not take an opportunity to shit talk that film.
It is so like, it is so panderingly, frustratingly bad.
It's so misguided.
The worst part is when Marie and I saw, we both saw it at TIFF.
Oh God.
And we were in the middle of this festival and we watched this piece of crap. And it's just like, it almost ruined my festival. I was like, what the hell is this even doing here?
It was so expensive too. It was so expensive.
Yeah.
It was so expensive.
Yeah.
That doesn't help when you know you've dropped like 26 bucks on this fucking movie and it's horrible.
Right. And then Fox Searchlight just drops a wet fart on you for 2 hours. Holy fuck, like continuous. Oh, that's horrible.
Did anybody who actually read that script not think that he was a sociopath?
Well, I mean, isn't it based on an award-winning musical,
which I have never seen, but I already hate it. I hate it to its core. I think it sucks.
Well, I think that that's why they made it, right? Because it was a bona fide hit on Broadway, and they're like, look, let's make this thing.
we got that piece of shit before Book of Mormon ever got adapted into a movie form, which is a fucking travesty. So,
oh, actually, there was My Year of Dicks, which I didn't finish watching.
I still haven't watched Dicks the musical.
I watched 5 minutes of it and turned it off.
Yeah, okay. That's what I did. It's not good. So okay. I didn't even rate it. So
there goes my excitement.
Speaking of Trey and Matt, did they ever do a Dear Evan Hansen episode? Like, that seems like it could have been incredible.
They should. I think it's too long. It's too far out now. It'd be really funny if they did one now. Just one of those big movie special ones that's like Dear Evan Hansen. That'd be really great and like a really weird pull. But I'd be down. Fuck that movie. So I
really liked their specials. The last couple of specials that they've done have been really, really like on point and very, very funny.
Panderverse, I thought, was like mean spirited more than usual. And I thought was them ironically pandering to like a Joe Rogan audience.
I didn't see that one. The last two that I saw were the Ozempic one.
Ozempic one's funny.
And then the one with the drinks, the power drinks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, the Prime. Yeah, everyone used the Prime one. Yeah. That's good. That one's really good, too. But, the Pandaverse one where Cartman wakes up in a world where everyone's changed to diverse women. And then Cartman's alter ego, he's Kathleen Kennedy. And she just constantly tells everyone, I'm going to check it and make her fucking gay.
We've totally gone off the rails now.
Yeah, we're talking South Park now.
So,
which, on topic of South Park, I just got Bigger, Longer on Uncut on 4K, which comes out next week.
Wow.
That's a win. That's a win. I can't
believe that exists.
That's a musical I'll watch.
Oh, my God.
Make a sound like a dying giraffe.
Ooh-ah.
Oh, my God.
She's the biggest bitch of them all.
The mole. Do you guys want to pick a movie for next episode?
Sure, what's coming?
Quiet Place.
Anybody want to watch a 3-hour Kevin Costner Western?
Horizons? I'll watch it, but I don't know if I'll like it. Apparently not many people have liked it.
Yeah, kind of got slammed at Cannes, eh?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it. It's
Costner.
Yeah, Costner. That same day, June 28th, Quiet Place Day One opens.
I'm looking forward to that. Who's the director on that one? He's a really interesting filmmaker. Why am I completely spacing on it?
Michael, I don't remember it either.
I'm going to look that up. Sorry.
I thought the first Quiet Place was quite good. I thought the second one kind of dropped a little bit, but it was still kind of watchable, if not completely implausible. But this one looks pretty fun. The fact that it's in a major city where everything is incredibly busy should be hopefully violent, at least. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I thought the trailer looked really good.
Yeah.
It's Michael Sarnowski directed it. He directed Pig.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Boom.
That works for me. July 3rd. So I guess that's American Long Weekend. So that's usually a huge movie weekend. So it's Despicable Me 4. I hate the Minions with a passion. I will never watch this film. I watched the first one. Haven't watched the other ones. Just no Minions for me. I don't know if you guys like them, but it's just not my thing.
I have kids, so I've seen them all.
Yep. Marina?
No, not my cup of tea.
Weirdly, probably my most anticipated, other than Maxine, my most anticipated is Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. I just hope Eddie's dirty. If he's PG Eddie, the film will suck.
Who's directing that one?
I don't know, but I hope it's fun. I really do.
Yeah.
I love Eddie.
And Judge is in it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm down. I'd be down as soon as I saw the teaser. I was down. I'm a sucker for Eddie. I really wanted to like Coming to America, but it was fucking garbage.
It sure was.
But I'm hoping for the Netflix treatment being a little bit better on him. Mark Malloy. Who the hell's Mark Malloy?
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's done some stuff, I think, for Apple.
Yeah, Apple at Work.
Yeah.
He's done all those episodes. Okay. So this is his feature debut then?
I think so.
Okay.
But then on July 5th, one of my most anticipated films, friends, Ty West is back with Maxine. The first two were great.
Yeah.
This one looks quite fun.
And it's like doing the whole Night Stalker angle.
Yeah.
And what's with Norman Bates' mother?
Yeah. In that new trailer, I was blown away by that. And also you have Elizabeth Debicki playing a fucking like LA detective in the 80s.
She's so good.
Gimme.
I'm with you.
Bacon. Yeah. I'm all over this movie. I finally just got my Blu-ray copy. I was so late to getting my Blu-ray copies of X and Pearl. I am gonna shotgun those fuckers and see Maxine, and I'm psyched for this film. I love his vibe changes between all these movies. I'm just all about it.
Yeah, I hope it's as strange as I think it's gonna be.
Yeah, it's gonna be fucked up. I'm so psyched.
And just because we've all talked about this one, July 12th, Fly Me to the Moon, don't even know what it is. It's got Channing Tatum and Scarlett Johansson in it.
It's Operation Avalanche.
Oh, okay. That I already seen that film. Lion King reissue. Cool.
What? No, we're not talking Mufasa. We're talking
The animated film is being re-released. But here's the real deal, folks.
Mm.
The horror film of the year. Mm-mm. Osgood Perkins.
Yeah, long legs.
That'll be my pick if we're looking at next.
It's movie. It's my pick as well if we get it.
Yeah, the trailers are incredible.
The trailers make my skin crawl. It is so effective.
And he has quite the pedigree as a director. So let's bring this shit on.
Like I think I said this on the previous episode, but he is so criminally underrated. The Black Coat's Daughter is a movie that everybody should have fucking seen. Yep. And Gretel and Hansel is got so much style that it should have been a fucking hit like The Witch.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm with you 110%. I think he's underrated. Mm-hmm. So for me, that would be the pick if it's one that, we all have access to. Otherwise, I'm not a huge fan of Ty West, Pearl, and whatever the other one was. Was it X? I don't remember. Yeah, I've seen them. I thought they were fine. I don't know. They're just not really for me. But I will take one for the team, and I will watch Maxine if that's the one we would select. I don't really care, to be honest.
I met Ty West at VIFF when he played that shitty Western he made.
In the Valley of Violence?
Yeah, it was so bad. But he was actually a really cool guy. Curtis Woloschuk and I talked to him in the lobby for like 20 minutes, and he was super cool. So nice. I have no problem supporting his stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I like him. Like, when you hear him talk, and he has a really unique approach to filmmaking, and I appreciate what he's doing. I generally don't like his movies. Like, I think The Innkeepers was maybe the last one that I kind of enjoyed.
I got asked, do you like The Sacrament?
I like The Sacrament.
The Sacrament rules.
I don't remember.
It's the Jonestown Massacre.
It's not.
Oh, yeah, that movie
it's
was
not good. Horror.
No, but that movie was really good.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. He's very
great too.
Like, he's just very hit and miss for me. And like I say, I can see what he's doing with this batch of slasher movies. They're just not really like, other than what's her name, who I think is kind of genius.
Mia Goth.
She's fantastic. The movies I just kind of think are fine, but I will watch Maxine if that's the one you guys want to see. To me, Long Legs is really definitely my pick.
Yeah, I'm so
I will go with whatever the team decides.
I'm going to be pushing Kate Parks at Elevation to get me a screener for this.
Good. Excellent.
Like, incessantly. Like, can you talk to Neon? talk to Neon. Hey, is Neon, did Neon call you? Did you talk to Neon? Did they get back to you? Have you checked your email box for a Neon email? Hey, is there something from Neon for me? Incessantly.
Fingers crossed that it works out.
Over and over again. Kate, I'm coming for you.
So guys, where can folks find you between now and the next episode?
I am Bill Harris. I am on Letterboxd and Twitter at SoundGem69. That's about it. I don't really do socials. So I'm also playing Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree. I thought I would say that my life is going to be screwed up for the next month or so. And yeah, this was good. Thanks, guys.
You can find me on Instagram at TheMarina2 and on Letterboxd at TheMarina. And that is all the social media I have been doing as of late. Steve?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at The Steeple Dead. I can find my website, stevestebbing.ca, and my YouTube channel is just under my name, Steve Stebbing. I do a show there every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time called What the Hell Should I Watch? With my daughter, Chloe. The last episode we did, I did on Bad Boys Inside Out 2. Which I already talked about on this episode. So, and also I'm on Tremble with Curtis and Taylor. Sorry, Kurt and Taylor. Let's call it, I'm his mom, calling him Curtis. the show is called Tremble. The last episodes we did were, I think it was the Predator 1 and Predator 2 was the last ones we did. And then we have, Wes Craven's original Nightmare on Elm Street and New Nightmare are next two episodes. And yeah, that's it.
Nice. I like it. Until then, you can find notes to all of the stuff we talked about today at the website at atcpod.ca. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. Until then.
Hack the planet.